I want to pick up where we left off last week. Last week we were discussing the idea of darkness and light in the month of Kislev. And we discussed at length the idea of what is Choshech exactly in terms of the metaphor. Why is it that Yavah, the nation of Greece, is referred to as a dark nation, a nation of Choshech? Why what they stand for is considered darkness? That was really where we left it off last week. I guess in short, to summarize, just to get our minds back into it, darkness was symbolic of not having full understanding of something. We said that Greece stands for the origins of science, of philosophy, which meant it was the human mind doing its best to figure things out, but ultimately it's going to hit a block, because the human mind is always limited. The human mind is extremely powerful, and we can understand so much, but at a certain point, we're going to hit a point where we say, I don't know. I guess the mushroom I like to use is that you take a calculator and divide by zero, it responds... Error. This is error. Calculator. Calculator divided by zero defines error. Because some things we can't understand everything. You know, there's some things we just can't compute and can't understand. That's what it is. So Choshech is there's a world of, there's so much we can understand from what Greece has taught us, but we have to understand as well that that's also limited. And that's not or, that's Choshech, because it's only focusing on one layer of the world. It's something which is limited, it's something which can't answer every single question. So the light that comes to illuminate that Choshech is the Torah. So I want to focus more on this week, the idea of light. Last week was darkness, this week was light. So what's light exactly? So when we talk about light, in Kislev in particular, the idea in general in the Torah of light, and in Hanukkah we'll talk about light, obviously. Hanukkah is the Yom Tov of light. But light is Torah. The Pasuk says initially, Ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. A mitzvah is a candle, and Torah is the light. So the Matsudas David, one of the major Pirushim on Nach, he explains that what's the idea of a candle versus light? A candle is localized. A candle can look at one like a flashlight. You can focus on one spot. Or light is all-encompassing. It's like the sun comes out, you can see everything around you. That's the idea of light. It's a much more all-encompassing, broader way of seeing the world. So every single mitzvah is one detail. It tells you one point of the truth. But Torah, as a larger body of understanding, tells you everything. The Torah is the all-encompassing light of Hashem. So then we have this darkness of Greece, and again, Chazal referred to Yavan as darkness. We mentioned last week, it says, Choshech al pnei sahom, that there's darkness on the face of the abyss, second pasuk in the Torah, and Chazal say the darkness is Greece, is Yavan. So the Torah is supposed to come and illuminate that darkness. Now let's explain a little more about, we talked about light. And again, we're using this as a symbolic term, but the Nach refers to Torah as a light. So what's light exactly? So we know that light enables us to see. You know, when the room is dark, you can't see anything. You turn on the light, you can see what's in the room. We mentioned last week in the darkness, you're feeling around, bumping, trying to find things. When the light's on, things are clear. So technically, the way I understand it, I think, is that all we really see is light. We see light bouncing off of things scientifically. We don't see a table. I see light bouncing off a table. That's what I see. So light's what we see in the world. Light is everything that we see. If our light's distorted, so we get a distorted picture. You put on glasses that have, like, you know, a green tint. So your whole world around you is green. You ever take one of these 3D glasses, we don't look at the movie screen, look elsewhere, and everything just looks strange. Because your glasses, you know, if your glasses are dirty, so then you see things that are smudged in your world. The whole world becomes smudged when you have smudged glasses. So light is something which has to be clear. If the light is not clear, then everything we see is not clear. And the more distorted our light is, the more distorted our picture of the world is. If you're in a room and the lights are all red, the whole room is red. And that's how everything looks. So you have to have proper lighting. You have to have very clear, pure lighting to see the world in a pure, clear way. The very first creation in Bereishis that we find is light. V'yomeru kim yehi or, v'yehi or. Hashem said, let there be light, and there was light. Because Hashem understands that this world is a world of concealment, of choshech, of darkness, and the first thing Hashem gave us is the ability to see. He gave us light. Before there was even a human being in the world, Hashem put light into the world. Because Hashem understood that the first thing we have to do is develop a perspective on life. We have to be able to, Hashem said, for this world to actually work, for people to be able to fulfill their mission in life, they have to have perspective. They have to have this light. They have to be able to see through all the concealment. It's interesting, that word, or, vahi or, it's the 25th word in the Torah, which is a reference to Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the 25th of Kislev, and the 20th word in the Torah is or, is light. Because Hanukkah is the festival of light, and that's the 25th word you find. It's one of the references you find in the Chumash, to Hanukkah. It's interesting. And we mentioned last week, you know, there's really two kinds of light. We have what we call the Or HaGanuz, the hidden light. That was our discussion last week. Another is the light that we have on a daily basis. So the sunlight and the light, you know, we have in our room right now, that's regular physical light and it helps us see. But we spoke about this hidden light of Hashem, this Or HaGanuz, and that's really the light that we're looking for. When it comes to studying Torah and to having Hanukkah, we're trying to tap into this hidden light of Hashem that helps us understand the world on a much broader basis. Last week we mentioned the Or HaGanuz was hidden away for tzaddikim. And I quoted something last week I wanted to share with you. I have copies of it this week. We can look at it. It's a small piece. We can look at it together quickly. We actually looked at it last week, but I wanted to do it again just to refresh ourselves and get back into it this week. But it's about this hidden light. And the hidden light of Bereishis, so Hashem saw this light. Hashem said that there's going to be Rishayim in the world who are not worthy of using this light. So therefore, I'm going to hide it away. And the Medrash says, where did Hashem hide it away? He hid it away in the Torah. That's where he hid the light. So if one studies Torah, one's able to pull out this light. This light, the Gemara tells us, Adam Rishon had this light. He used it for 36 hours, you mentioned last week as well. And he was able to see the entire world from one end to the other, is the way the Gemara describes it. Which means he had an understanding of the whole world in its whole breadth and depth through this light. This light gave him full understanding. And that light was concealed from us. It was taken away and hidden inside the Torah. So I want to look together at this piece against the Yosher Divrei Emes. He was a Hasidic Rebbe. His name was, it's on the bottom here, Meshulam Faivish Ben Aaron Moshe Halevi. Heller, that was his name. And I bracketed it off. It's the second to last paragraph on the bottom. Let's read it together. And it's a very powerful paragraph to help us understand the hidden light of Torah. He says, K'moshe Shemati Pi Rav HaChasid Marinu HaRav Gershon Latzker Talmud Eloki Rav Dov Ber Zal. So he says, I heard from a great Rav, his name was Rav Gershon Latzker, who was a student of the Maggid of Mezrich, Rav Dov Ber, who was a student of the Baal Shem Tov. And he said, B'Shem Rabbi, said in the name of his Rebbe, in the name of, I guess, the Maggid of Mezrich, Amaymer Sh'amru Chazal, on that which Chazal teach us, Rakash Baruch Hu Or She'enu Kedai L'Shtamesh Bo. Hashem saw this hidden light, and he said that the world is not worthy of this light. V'ganzo what tzaddikim asalavon, and he hid it away for tzaddikim in the future. V'hiksha, heicha, and ganzo. So they asked the question, where did he hide it? Like, where do you go find this light? If it's hidden away, it must be, you can find it somewhere. V'ani katzer devarav v'kush Yosef. So I'm going to summarize what he said. V'tochen devarav sh'ar perish devri razao. And what the substance of what he really means is the following. She'atori or gadol. The Torah is a tremendous light. Mitchila haya or nigla. Initially, the light of Torah was revealed to all. Meaning it was just available. And it's easy to understand the world, easy to understand the Torah. The gunzo, v'echa gunzo akash baruch hu. After that, Hashem hid it away. V'heichan gunzo b'Torah. Where is this or nigla? Where is this light that was revealed? Where was it hidden away? In the Torah. Gunzo v'halimo she'eno nigla or latipshim l'anashim bilti shlemim. Hashem hid it away and concealed it so it will not be revealed to people who are foolish or imperfect. Him ena masiga hanelam, because they won't really understand it. Aval tzadikim acharedim advaro, the tzadikim who tremble at Hashem's word and are cautious and careful with learning Torah, v'dorshei Hashem, and those who seek out Hashem, v'chokrim osokim amonim, and they search out the Torah like looking for buried treasure. K'mosh amar kasuk, like it says in Mishlim, tivakshenu kekesef, if you seek out Torah like silver, like money, as asid lavo leim or, so they will be privy to that or. They'll get that light. V'zeo ganzo tzadikim asid, this is what it means that Hashem hid it away for tzadikim in the future. This will come to tzaddikim if they seek out Hashem through Torah. So it's very clear from this piece, but clear in many ways, that this hidden light is found in the Torah. So if we're trying to drive away all this darkness in the world, so how do we drive away all this darkness? We drive away darkness through the light of Torah. That's what we do. The Or HaGanuz is really the Or that gives us the perspective on life. It's found in the Torah. So our world is very confusing. Our world is very confusing. We're in darkness, things are not clear, and the truth under this veil of darkness, which, you know, confuses us and misleads us, and we have to be able to take the Torah and use that to illuminate our lives. And the Torah tells us how the world really works. And the science tells us to a certain degree how the world works, but the Torah tells us even further. The Torah tells us about absolutes, it tells us not just the whats we said, but the whys. It exposes things that are sheker, that are totally false. It teaches us how to act. It teaches us how to be true people, how to be moral people. That's all found in the Torah. Science cannot determine those things. It's impossible. It's the proper lenses in life. Instead of having clear lenses, the Torah gives us those lenses. The more Torah we study and understand, the clearer lenses become. and all those things that the scientists and philosophers and the academics won't or can't answer, Torah does answer. Torah has those answers. Torah can answer for science as well. It's all contained in Torah, if you know how to find it. And the Torah can give us even more, go well past that. You know, there's an old mashal. I heard it from Redwitz, actually, several times. There was a person lived out on a rural farm, and he heard that there's something called a movie. He never saw a movie before. I'm talking about the old-time movies where they're projecting it up on the screen. So he goes into the big city, and he sits down in the movie theater, and there's a movie playing on the wall. And there's like cowboys and Indians and horses and all sorts of stuff happening. He's like amazed, like, wow, this is amazing. How does this work? So he's not really sure how it works. So he takes out his flashlight and shines it at the wall so he can figure things out. Everyone's like, sit down, what are you doing? When you shine the flashlight on the movie screen, you can't see anything anymore. It was so bright, you couldn't see the movie anymore. And the mashal is that sometimes we see things around us that look so real, but when you shine light on it, you realize that it's actually false. So he thought, there's these horses behind the screen, like, where are they coming from? He shines his light on it, and there's nothing there anymore. So sometimes when you think in life, things around you are so real and so vivid, but you take out the lessons of Torah, and you try to understand things in that light, you realize, no, that's not really true. You know, that's not really the Torah perspective. That's not really the truth of life. That's actually Sheker. And Torah tells us what's really true, what's really false. Science can't do that. Science is limited into a certain box. The human mind and what you can observe in the physical world is limited because it's all what we observe in our own mind, our own world. And science has to observe and reproduce that which it is able to actually detect. But beyond that, it can't do anything anymore. Now, there's a famous concept, which maybe you've heard before, but it's worth explaining again, that Hanukkah is an 8-day long Yom Tov. The week is we have 7 days in our week, and Hanukkah is 8 days long. The Maharal is famous, we talked about before, about describing numbers. So we know that 7 is the number of the creation of the world. The world's created in 7 days. 6 days in Shabbos. So 7 is the number of that which fits into our physical framework. That's what 7 is. 8, we always say, is the number of the supernatural. 8 goes beyond that. It's one beyond 7. So Hanukkah is an 8-day Yom Tov because Hanukkah is showing that the Greeks live by the number 7. Now they live by all that we can see within our physical world. And they can see a lot of it. But Hanukkah says we have to go on beyond that, because we understand that there's a whole other framework of existence and reality and rules and laws and truths that are not scientific and not physical. It's a world of Torah and a world of Hashem and the world of spirituality, which is imposed upon our world, which science will never see and never detect, but we know about it and we can detect it. So that's number 8. So Hanukkah is dafka an 8-day Yom Tov, because Hanukkah is symbolizing to us the ability to go beyond our world. We're saying that, no, we're not going to stick within our world, within our sevens. That's Greek. We're going to be able to appreciate the 7, but also know there's an 8. There's something there's something beyond that which rules our world, controls our world, and gives us the truth of our world. There's a much deeper layer of understanding which goes beyond the 7. That's why, you know, you have, you know, the bris is on the 8th day, because it shows that a child has something far beyond his physical body. That's why, you know, Shavuos is the beginning of, you count 7 weeks of the Omer, and Shavuos is the 8th week. Because Torah is given on the number 8, the 8th week, because the 8 always shows there's something beyond our world. There's 7s and there's 8. So Shabbos is part of the 7, because Shabbos is within our world. Shabbos is a completion of the creation of this world. But the idea of 8 is going supernatural, beyond our world. That's the idea of 8. So Torah connects us to this world, which is so much bigger and so much broader than ours. It's an infinite world. It's a world which has an understanding that goes far beyond that which we can perceive in our world. Torah brings us information. If you want to picture it this way, there's a box of our world, and science can look around in the box with its test tubes and microscopes and telescopes and everything else. But Torah goes beyond the box, and Torah is able to bring in information that's beyond our box because it comes from Shemayim. It's beyond the physical world. That's what Torah does for us. People talk a lot about this concept of, you know, of Das Torah. You know, it's a concept which has become somewhat controversial in modern times. Different Jews feel differently about the idea of asking Das Torah. You go to a gadol and you ask questions. So every Jew agrees, if you have a halacha question, you ask a Rav the question. He's the Rav, you ask him halacha. In Eretz Yisrael, you find political parties asking political advice from great gadolim. And people will go to gadolim with all sorts of questions, even beyond the framework of halacha. And some people are uncomfortable with that. Like, why should I ask this gadol information which is beyond the realm of halacha? I mean, he knows halacha very well. Who says he can give me advice in the realm of medicine or politics or education? Why should I do that? But the answer is, when you learn Torah, Torah is supposed to be giving you a perspective not just on a halacha, but on everything in life. Torah is an all-encompassing work that Hashem's input into our world, and somebody who's really steeped in Torah study should have the ability to answer everything. So when you go to a gadol, assuming he's a real gadol who has Yir Shemayim and has absorbed himself in Torah for decades and decades and decades, he should have the Torah's insight into everything at that point, not just into what the halacha is my pot kosher or treif, but he should be able to understand how people function, how the world works, how governments work. That's something, and they could be wrong also, but the fact that he has that insight is not a surprise to us, because when you're studying Torah, that's supposed to infuse within you all the understanding of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and how we should view the world from these clear lenses. And if your lenses are clear, you can see a lot better than if your lenses are smudged. And that's the idea of going to a gadol for Das Torah. Again, you have to choose the right person, obviously, but if you're going to that person, and there are people out there that we know are, incredible gedolim, those people should have this clear perspective based on the light of Torah. That's also the reason why yeshiva learning is so focused on Limud Torah. There are people out there who ask, why don't they do more chesed in the yeshiva? Or why don't the boys, aren't they taught more about davening, things like that? They focus so much on learning Torah. But the answer is because they're trying to develop within these boys at a young age a perspective on life. Because Torah is the perspective, it's the light. Everything else should fall under that. But they're trying to develop in a person the ability to see the world from this really clear perspective. That's the idea of the light of Torah. So science, the world of Yava and the world of Choshech, gives us this very, very limited glimpse. And they can give us a true glimpse, but it's very limited. And Torah gives us so much more. So the attack of Yavan on Klal Yisrael is very interesting. On Chanukah, what happens, we say in Al Hanisim, we say they came to us, Lashkicham Torah Secha. Their goal was to cause us to forget the Torah. Now why do they care if we remember the Torah or forgot the Torah? It's because the Torah stood right up against their ideology. Their ideology was that everything in this world has to be understood by my mind, has to be scientific, has to be logical. And we said, no, there's things that are beyond us. There's a whole world of Torah which comes from an infinite God, and you're not going to pick up with science, and it could be your human logic's not going to understand it either. But we understand it because it comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And they say we can't tolerate that, because that goes right up against what we think is right. So they came, Lashkicham Torsecha, they're trying to attack us, in the Torah in particular. And we'll talk about it more, I don't know, this week or next week, but we know that they didn't really care to kill us, they wanted to assimilate us. They wanted us to drop our ideology, because they had an ideology, which was this ideology we're discussing of Choshech, and we had Torah, and they said we can't stand for people living life like that, because that doesn't fit what we believe. And that was really what they came out to do. They didn't want to kill us, they wanted to assimilate us. That's what they're trying to do. This is the attack, so Kislev is this month, where we're in the darkness, it's the darkest month of the year, approaching the solstice. It's a month where the darkness around symbolizes to us the darkness of Yavan, which is the nation of darkness. They're trying to tell us, ignore the Torah, and be caught up in this world of Greek culture, of science, of philosophy, of everything that we've discussed. And we're coming back at them and saying that we have to bring the light to illuminate this darkness which you're trying to present to us. And that light comes through the Hanukkah. The menorah, obviously, is a mitzvah of light. And that's the clash happening right now in the month of Kislev. Now, I want to clarify one more time as well that science is not wrong. We Jews appreciate science very much. We have many great gedolim who also learned science, were scientists, were doctors, were philosophers. We have that, and we appreciate that as well. But it's a matter of putting it into its proper place. Hashem revealed himself to the world really twice in history. Hashem spoke at Bereshis, and Hashem spoke at Har Sinai. So at Bereshis, when Hashem spoke, what did he say? He said there should be light, and there should be the ocean, and there should be trees, there should be animals. Hashem's putting into play the laws of nature. Science came about because Hashem spoke at Bereshis. That was science. Hashem put science into place at Bereshis. At Har Sinai, Hashem spoke and taught us Torah, and put Torah into place. That happened at Har Sinai. So these are two revelations of Hashem. The big difference is the revelation at Bereshis of science. So if we try, you can find Hashem also by studying science, because if you see how complex and how perfect the whole system works, that should also lead you to Hashem. But yet it's still a little bit more, it's not so clear. It's a little more vague, the understanding, because people can study science and they don't quite understand anything about God. They might see there is a God. They might see there's an amazing God who's very, very intelligent. We can't understand much more than that from studying science. It's very difficult to do that. Because the revelation of science is something which is more indirect, it's more vague. Hashem's revelation at Har Sinai, which is Torah, is a direct revelation. Hashem says, let me tell you about me and about my desires and my mitzvos, and let me tell you very clearly the message. That happened at Har Sinai. So Hashem spoke both places, and both places are ways to discover Hashem. And many people are able to strengthen their emuna through science. I mean, then you look, whether you look at the beauty of the world or you look at a scientific equation, if you appreciate it, you can strengthen your emuna through that. But yet, it doesn't mean you get the direct message of Hashem that way. The direct message comes only through Torah. So it's going to be this balance between the indirect versus the direct revelation, or it's the vague versus the more clear revelation, or it's the natural versus the supernatural. But that's the two points of Bereishis and Har Sinai come together, is that Hashem revealed himself at both places, and we have to understand that Bereishis, the laws of nature, are also a revelation of Hashem, and they're true, and they're a way that we can appreciate Hashem. But as Jews, we have to recognize that the true revelation only comes through Torah, and we can't get caught up in that. If you get caught up only in science and ignore Torah, then you're only seeing a very superficial layer of what the world's all about. And that's really the challenge that Yavin presents to us, is that Choshech. So that to me is this idea of Or versus Choshech. In Kislev, when we're in the darkest month, our job is to bring out that Or. So it's a month where we should focus more on appreciating the light of Torah, understanding how Torah can illuminate our lives and give us that perspective on life to give us clarity. Don't let ourselves be caught up in the darkness. We should be able to appreciate our light. And that's one big avodah of Chodesh Kislev. And one interesting thing about Kislev, so we had a chart we looked at a few weeks ago. I can look at it again. I think I still have a few copies of it. About what is the different symbols of each month. Those of you who have the charts, you can take it out. I think I'm a few. I saved them here so we can refer back to it. So you can look again at the chart. It's here. So we're going to look at Kislev now. I want to discuss a few of these points about Kislev. So Kislev, the mazel of Kislev, in terms of the signs of the zodiac, the mazel of Kislev is Keshes. So Keshes means literally a bow. In Lashon HaKodesh, Keshes refers to both like a bow and arrow, or like a rainbow. They're all considered a Keshes in Lashon HaKodesh. So how do we understand the idea of a Keshes, you know, the bow being the symbol of Kislev? Why is that the zodiacal sign for Kislev? So I was thinking about it. It's very interesting because a bow, number one, is a weapon. In ancient wars, were fought with bows, you know, swords and bows. That was the way you fought a war. So if you're fighting a war, you take out your bow and arrow and you shoot. The weapon, it's a weapon to fight human battles. Now the idea of Keshes also comes up in a very interesting way in Parshas Vayechi. In Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov is speaking to his children. I think to Yosef, I think in particular there. And he talks about giving him the city of Shechem. And he says, I'm going to give you the city of Shechem that I captured, v'charbi uv'kashti. I captured it with my sword and my bow. So it sounds like he had some sort of physical battle. But we don't find Yaakov fighting a battle personally. We do find that there was a battle that Shimon Levi went into Shechem. Was Yaakov, I captured Shechem, v'charbi uv'kashti. So the Targum Unklus explains that pasuk to mean that I captured Shechem b'tzlusi v'usi, with my davening, with my prayers. So he says that Charbi's sword and bow actually refer to different types of tefillah. That's what Targum Unklus says. So we think you fight a war with a bow and arrow, and the Unklus says that's not really what fights the war. What really wins the war is not the bow and arrow, it's the tefillah. There's a reason why different tefillahs are called by a sword or by a bow. I guess as an aside, you know, the idea of a... Pharaoh says this. One of the Farshim explained that you have a tefillah which is like a set tefillah like Shachar Minchah Maariv. You have spontaneous tefillah. So a bow and arrow, the arrow is not very sharp. What gives it its power is the strength of the bow. But an arrow and it's just an arrowhead. They're not sharp arrowheads. They're pretty dull. It's just that when you have the bow and you shoot it, it goes very, very far because of the way you shot it and it penetrates the target. A sword is sharp on its own. So a sword takes very, very little to actually hurt the enemy, whereas a bow takes a lot of strength. It's based on your strength. So the Mefarshim explained that certain tefillos, our set tefillos based on our set nusach, those are powerful regardless of our kavana. Obviously kavana is better, but it's like a sword, because a sword will cut without much force because it's very, very sharp. And those set tefillos, the set nusach that was given to us by Chazal, those are powerful tefillos regardless of our, even if we don't have no kavana one day, it's still powerful. When it comes to personal prayer, when we come up with our own words and our own tefillos, so Hashem's acceptance of those prayers is based on our kavana. This is not something I'm obligated to do. It's not something that's part of my daily routine. It's something that I did on my own. So if I have a lot of kavana, then it's much more powerful. If I have less kavana, it's not very powerful. It's like the bow and arrow, because the arrow itself is not very sharp, but if I put a lot of strength into it, it's able to penetrate into an animal. That's able to do. So the tefillah are compared to bow and the sword, based on that. You have the ones that are like swords that are sharp regardless of our kavana, and you have the tefillahs that are like bows that are only our kavana gives it its strength. That's the bow and the sword. But we find that this bow is interesting. So the bow represents tefillah, but also a weapon. It's both things. And to me, this is one of the major understandings of what we're talking about here in Kislev. Kislev is the battle of the dark and light of Yavan and Klal Yisrael. So Yavan tells you, how do you win a war? You have to use physical, scientific ways to win a war. It has to be with a bow and an arrow and a sword and a gun and a tank. You know, that's how wars are won. Klal Yisrael says, how are wars really won? How does a Jew say a war is won? We have to fight the battle. But how is it? That's by Hashem. It's through our tefillos. So they say you have to look at the world, the natural world. The natural world tells you wars are won through bows, the keshes. And we say there's another kind of keshes. Keshes could be a bow, but keshes can also be davening. And we'll tell you that no, the Torah perspective of how a war is won is not limited to the army. The army can be very weak, but what really wins the war is the tefillah. Which is the story of Hanukkah, exactly. The story of Hanukkah is we have this tiny little army made up of the Chashmonaim, whichever Jews decided to come and fight. We talk about it being, they were not strong, they were not mighty. If we daf say it's Rabim b'yam y'atim, Gibor b'yam chaloshim. It was the strong in the hands of the weak, it was the many in the hands of the few, it was a very weak army. Rashi says, interestingly, Rashi says in Vezos HaBracha, I think he says it was like about 13 people or something total. It's a very small army, you know? Which is very difficult Rashi to understand. You picture at least to be more than 13 people. They're fighting the Greek Empire. This is the world empire of the time.
Elephants.
Yeah, everything. And what happened? They won. They were able to win. Why did they win? It was an ace. It was an ace from Hashem. But the war of Hanukkah shows us very, very clearly it's not about the military might. It's about the fact that the real way we won was because it was Rishayim Biad Sadiqim. Like we say, Al Nisim. It was the wick in the hands of the righteous. That's what it was. That's what won the war. It was the keshes of tefillah. It wasn't the keshes of the bow and arrow. It was the davening. It was the learning. It was the tzaddikim that won the war. One of my biggest pet peeves is about how, I guess, the broader culture views Hanukkah. They view Hanukkah as the Maccabees are considered like these mighty military warriors. That's what you hear about any non-Orthodox circle. They talk about Hanukkah. It's about the Maccabees being great warriors and strong and mighty, and they're able to use their military prowess and overcome the Greek army. And every time I hear that, it drives me crazy, because that's exactly, we say the opposite in tefillah. We say, no, this is the weak and the strong, and it was the strong in the hands of the weak. It was the many in the hands of the few. The reason they won was not because they were such great soldiers. They may have been lousy soldiers. You know, it's unclear whether they're good soldiers or not. They won because it was Rishayim Biyad Tzadikim, and that's why they won. And it was an incredible nace. And that's what we say in our tefillos, and that's how we view Hanukkah. Hanukkah is all, the whole message of Hanukkah is this message. It's not about the natural world, it's about the supernatural world. It's not about the army, it's about Hashem's help of the army. It's about the tefillos of the army. That's what it's about. There's a story which occurred in the town of Brisk, I guess it was around during the 1800s. They had in Brisk, there was a major group of maskilim, these so-called enlightened Jews who were essentially anti-religious, anti-Torah, and these are the Jews who very much came in to the yeshivas, pulled boys away. Instead of having them learn Torah, they had them focus on Jewish culture, but they stripped away the religion from the whole experience. And there's a big group of maskilim in Brisk, and they put on a play. I guess it was, I don't know if it's a Purim play, it's some sort of like play they're putting on to make fun of the Torah. That's what they were doing. So they made a play of the Jews going out to war on the Torah. And we know when the Jews went to war on the Torah, what happened? They had a Kohen Meshuch Muhammad. The Kohen would get up in front of the army, and he would send home people who weren't worthy of fighting. So he would first say, anybody who has just gotten married should go home. Anybody who has just planted a vineyard should go home. Anybody who has just built a house should go home. Anybody who is scared of going out to war should go home. And essentially, the Gemara tells us he was trying to weed out all the Rishayim. Anybody who was scared of any avera they had, they don't have the schus from Hashem to fight, should go home. So eventually, the army was dwindled down to pretty small numbers. And who was left? So in their play, they're making fun of this, because this is an army, you know, sending home all your soldiers. And at the end in the play, they had two people left. They had Rav Chaim Brisker, and I think it was Rav Chaim Brisker and the Shagas Aryeh. Two three Gedolim. So back in the play, they have these two old men there with long gray beards and their shtenders going off to fight the war. I'm going to smack out the shtender, something from my Gemara at him. Like that was like the play. That's what they were doing. And they made fun of this. So they went to, I think they went to Rav Chaim Brisker, who was the Rav of the town and the great Gadol. They told him what happened. They said, you know, look what they're doing. They're making fun of you, making fun of the Torah. What a disgusting thing. So Rav Chaim said to them, you know, they forgot something. They missed at the end that we won the war. That's what they forgot about. We actually won at the end. That's what he said. And that really was, I mean, obviously that's a little caricature of it, but that was how the wars were fought. It was not fought based on who is the best soldier, who can yield the sword in the nicest way, and who can shoot the nicest arrow, and who can ride who can ride the horses the quickest. That's not the way the Jews assembled their armies. Armies were assembled based on who had the schus, who did mitzvahs, who daven, who is not scared of the averus that they have. And then Hashem will take care of the rest. That's how we fought wars back then. And that was the way the Jews... And then that was the story of Hanukkah. And that army was not a strong army. It was a weak army of tzaddikim. That's what it was. So this idea of the keshes of Kislev, to me, really has this dual meaning. The Greeks will tell you it's all about the bow. It's all about the bow and arrow. How strong can you shoot that arrow? And then the Jews will tell you, no, it's not about the bow and arrow. It's about the davening. It's about Yaakov's charbi v'kashti. Yaakov says, I captured Shechem with my tfilos, my sword and my bow, meaning my powerful tfilos, and that's what we're going to say. So that's really the story of Hanukkah, and the bow is a deception. You know, which bow is it? Is the bow of the war, or is the bow of davening? So we can be deceived and think, and we go out to fight still. Now, even in modern times, we've seen miracles with the Jewish army, the Israeli army. And we think, you know, again, it's a very powerful army, but ultimately, where is the victory coming from? Many of these victories that we've had in the past 50, 60 years have certainly been miraculous. I think we can all agree to that. It's not, even though they have an extremely powerful army, really some of these victories are just unbelievable. And the answer is because of Kosh Baruch Hu is protecting them. That's the answer. So it's not the bow, it's the tefillah. It's that kind of keshes. The bow is the deception. You think it's the gun. It's not the gun. It's Hashem who's controlling the gun. That's what it is. It's also very interesting that the whole concept of the bow also means the rainbow. Right? The keshes can be a bow or it could be a rainbow. I mean, Lashon Kodesh is all the same. So we know the rainbow is famous from Parshas Noach. That's where we find the rainbow. And I was thinking about Parshas Noach. And it's very interesting. You know, there's a piece of the Ramban in Parshas Noach, which is it's a fascinating piece. We know that Hashem took the rainbow, and Hashem made the rainbow into the symbol that he won't bring a mabul anymore. That was the rainbow. So the question is, did Hashem invent the rainbow at that moment? I mean, the rainbow is an existing scientific phenomena. A rainbow, you could create a rainbow on your own. You can take a hose and a light, whatever, you can make rainbows. It's scientific. So what does it mean Hashem made a rainbow into the symbol for the world that he won't bring a mabul? I mean, the rainbow was an existing scientific thing. It's like anything else in the world. Why was that special? So the Ramban talks about this in Parshas Noach. And the Ramban says that, you know, when you first read the Pasuk, you think that this rainbow was new, that this phenomenon did not exist until now, and only now did Hashem create a rainbow. That's what Ramban first says. And he says the rainbow is a symbol of peace, because it used to be when people went out to war and they wanted to surrender, they turned their bows backwards. So the rainbow, the way that it's facing, it's as if Hashem is not firing down on us. You know, it's Hashem's bow is turned backwards now, like I'm at peace with you. That's how we view it. So it would be like putting your hands up in the air and waving your white flag. They would turn their bow around towards themselves to show, I'm not going to shoot. So Hashem is as if Hashem was turning his bow around, saying, I'm at peace with you, I'm not going to bring any more mabul. But then the Ramban says, no, that's not the idea. The idea is not, it wasn't invented at that point. The Ramban says, and it's actually a very interesting language he uses, if you listen carefully, he says, Anachnu akorchenu namin adivrei hayavanim. He says, we're forced to believe the Greeks on this one. He means the scientists. That's what he means. So we're talking about the Greek and the idea of science. And the Choshech Ramban says, we're forced to believe the scientists that a rainbow is a natural occurrence. Hashem didn't put any new laws of nature into the world after creation. Those all came from creation. So he says that you could take water, take a bucket of water, and you can put it in the sun. You could create your own rainbow. That's what the scientists tell us, and that's true. So he says, so in the Pasuk, you don't say that Hashem created the rainbow for the very first time in Parshas Noach. That's not true. The rainbow was around from Bereishis. And we have to believe the scientists, he says, that that's true. So what did Hashem do? But Hashem, at this point, just told us that even though the rainbow already exists, it's now going to be symbolic of something happening in Shemayim. And this brain bowl, which is already a pre-existing scientific event, he says, will now be an os bris. It'll be a covenant, a sign of the covenant between me and you. It is very similar to, you know, when, just one second, let me find the quote here. If here similar, says to Yaakov, you know, this is Parsha, in Vayetze, when Yaakov leaves from Lavan, they set up this mound. They say, here's a mound here. This is a symbol of the agreement we made. And a lot of times in Chumash, you find symbols of different agreements. So it was a symbol. It wasn't Hashem that created the rainbow at that point as a brand new scientific event. It was already existing. But now it has more meaning. Hashem said, whenever you see the rainbow, even though it's scientific, it's infused with a deeper meaning. So to me, this also rings with the very same idea we're talking about before. The rainbow is scientific. It's a scientific event. It's something that anyone can recreate. Science explains exactly how rainbow works. But Hashem says, you have to understand, when you see a rainbow, there's much more to it than meets the eye. It's not just science. There's a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that rainbow. And it's the same keshes has this dual meaning. There's the meaning that it could be very, very natural and physical and scientific. That's a very superficial layer. But the rainbow itself is not superficial. Yes, it's a beautiful thing and it's scientific, but there's a deep message from Hashem that's going to be expressed through every single rainbow you see. That's what Hashem tells the world right now. So you have this idea of keshes. So you keep finding this dual concept of there's Hashem, the way He runs the world. There's Hashkacha. There's Hashem's message to us. There's a much deeper layer of the world. And there's a natural layer of the world. So it could be through the weapon of the bow and arrow. It could be through the rainbow. These are scientific things, natural things in the course of human life, but they have much more deeper meaning. So you have the tefillos versus the bow, and you have the message of the rainbow versus the scientific part of the rainbow. That's what you have over here. But that's the bris of Hashem. Back to the where's that chart? Back to the chart. So the Kislev also, it says, the Sefer Yetzirah tells us that in the month of Kislev, it corresponds to Hashem, it corresponds to sleep, Shena, and it says, the letter is Samech, and the action of the month, like we'll call it, is sleeping, right? So it is dark outside. That we can certainly understand, right? Certainly it's dark outside. And when it's cold out, you don't want to get out of bed. You want to stay under the covers, you know. So it's definitely dark outside. But how can we relate to this idea of things being, of the letter Samech and the idea of sleeping? So just to address the letter Samech for a second. Samech is a letter which is enclosed. It's like a box, Samech. And the Samech of the gematria of the word Kli, of a vessel, is 60. It's Samech. Also, the word tene also means a basket. It's also samech. These things that are baskets, there's enclosed kalim, a samech. And samech itself, the picture of a samech is an enclosed kli. So based on the theme we were talking about before, if you look at Kislev as the month of darkness, it's the idea of we're focusing on the whole world being enclosed. I mean, Kislev tries to drive us away from seeing the supernatural and keeps us inside our box. It's trying to have us focus on the box of our world, the world of science, the things we can detect with our eyes, with our senses, but ignore that which is beyond us, the supernatural, the world of Torah, and the world of light. So to me, the letter Samech represents that very clearly, because Samech is that box. We're talking about being inside the box or outside the box. So the letter 7 is everything in our box. The letter 8 is things that are outside our box. So Samech is that box. And the fact that the word Kli, which is really, I guess, a box, is the Gematria 60, which is Samech, it's all the same concept, that we're talking about a month that limits us, that tries to keep us focused within and doesn't let us see things that are without. That's the idea of the Samech. Now, what about sleeping? Now, what's this idea of sleeping? So for that, I'll give you guys another handout here. This is last handout of the day. Another handout. This is actually, don't be surprised, we see the word Purim on top. Because it is a piece that was written about Purim, but it talks about sleep, which I think relates very much to our discussion here. This here is, it says Or Gedaliah, was Rabbi Gedalia Shor Zatzal, who was probably, they say he was one of the first great American-born Gedolim. He was a Rosh Shiva and Torah Vadas. He wrote a very beautiful Sefer, Or Gedaliah, who talks about different parshas and Moadim. So the piece I want to look at, it's the bottom left corner, I bracketed it off, letter Zion. It's on page 9 on top, this is page 9 on top. And this is actually a piece that he's discussing in Megillus Esther, for Purim, which we're not quite at yet. But he talks about the idea of sleep. And I want to show how this idea of sleep really corresponds very much to our discussion into the month of Kislev. So he says here, Ksiv Yeshno Am Echad. So it says in the Megillah, Haman comes to Ahasuerus with his presentation He wants to kill the Jews. And Haman says, Yeshno Amechad, there is a nation. Now the word Yeshno also sounds like the word Yashem, which is sleeping. And you could read it that there's a nation that is sleeping. So in terms of the actual reading of the Megillah, it means there exists a nation. But you could also read it that there's a sleeping nation. Chazal look at it, that there's a and actually see the word Yashin in there, and sleeping. And they said that there's a sleeping nation. And Chazal say, Elokeim shel elu yashinhu, that Haman tells Achashverosh, the God of these people is sleeping. Their God's asleep. Look, we can do whatever we want with them now. No one's going to protect them. This is the times of Golos. It was after the Churban of Beis HaMikdash. We were in bad shape at this point. And Haman, you know, he was a Rasha, but he was perceptive. And he was a wise person in his own way. He said, look, you know, their God's asleep right now. You can do what you want. He's not going to stop you. He destroyed their temple, and he's not there for them right now. We do find that Hashem has a Haga. He has a way in which he functions. This is page 100 now, top right, which is called Yashin. Meaning Hashem obviously never sleeps. But Hashem does have a Hanhaga, which we refer to as Hashem is sleeping. Like it says in Tehillim, Ura lama sishan Hashem. It says in Tehillim, wake up. Why, Hashem, are you asleep? V'china zu shel yashin nikris kishanhaga imabriya hi hanhaga shel mikra. So it doesn't mean that Hashem is asleep. How we understand that Hashem has gone to sleep, we say that means that sometimes we see the world acting in a way which is very, very natural. Natural course of cause and effect. We don't see Ashkacha. We don't see Nisim. We don't see Hashem's hand in daily life. So we'll say Hashem is asleep right now because we don't see Hashem being active. If you think about it, you know, when we're sleeping, that's the point where our body's on autopilot. You know, things are just kind of going. We're not in control when we're sleeping. When we're awake, hopefully we have control over our bodies. But when we're asleep, we're just kind of, things just kind of keep on going on their own. So if Hashem is asleep, kiviyachol, what it means is that Hashem is letting the world go. Hashem is not intervening. Hashem is not creating nisim. Hashem is just saying, okay, I'll sit back and let things just run the course of history. So that's the hanhaga called yashin. V'chinezu shel yashin, nikras kishan haga, mabriya hi hanhaga shel mikra. That's the things that are running based on mikra, on just happenstance. When the whole world seems to just function under teva and not under things that are supernatural. So this already sounds very much like we're discussing. When we talk about the world ideas of choshech and Greece, we're talking about things that function totally within the world of teva. That Hashem is not stepping in, Hashem is not taking control. They see things that are just scientific, cause and effect, historic. They don't see anything beyond that. That kol toliv avodas ben Yisrael, and everything is based on our avoda. What do we do? Keshem bebechina zu shel shena, if we are asleep, how do we live our lives? Azan hagam el mayla gam ki bechina zu. Hashem always acts with us based on our actions. Like the Baal Shem Tov says, Hashem tzilcha. The pasuk says Hashem is your shadow. So when you move, your shadow moves with you. So there's an idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will act with us, we act with Him. So if we are sleepy, if we don't perceive Hashem in life, if we're very passive, if we don't have any passion in our mitzvos, so Hashem also becomes passive and doesn't involve Himself in our life, and He steps back as well. If we're cold, Hashem is cold. If we're passionate, Hashem is passionate. That's how it works. So if Klal Yisrael is in a state where they are not acting, you know, with the recognition of Hashem and with warmth in mitzvos, so Hashem also goes to sleep. If we're not awake, Hashem is not awake. Shekafima shismayga adam ilmata kim esnagim min hashemayim. The way we act down here, Hashem acts up there. Amru Chazal, amachasu yeshnu amechad, yishenim in mitzvos. So Chazal tell us on this very pasuk that there's a nation out there that Haman says that we were asleep. We were asleep for mitzvos. So Haman says, look, their God is asleep. Why? Because we're asleep. Because if we're not doing mitzvos with a passion, and we're not focused, and we're not alert, so Hashem also, He becomes dispassionate as well, and Hashem steps back. If we're doing mitzvahs without any energy, without any life to them. When we're lazy and don't do any mitzvahs, then Hashem also, like mitzvahs on just going through our habits. So Hashem too, at this time, will react to us also in a sleeping way. Hashem will be sleepy. Hashem will act on autopilot. The world will just be subject to cause and effect, to mikra, to happenstance. And we won't see any hashkacha. Shem tacha, seder, shemikra. Everything will be just under cause and effect and natural events. So Yavan would tell us, God doesn't interact with the world. The world's very scientific. History repeats itself. We can just study and analyze what's around us and figure out future events. You have to fight wars based on you know, the prowess and the military might of your army, and there's no hashkacha, there's no God involved. You know, it's interesting, the Greeks, the way that the Chazal describe it, they didn't tell us there is no God. What they said was, so you have no portion in God. God is someone that doesn't interact with you. There could be God up there somewhere in the sky, that doesn't bother us. But God doesn't interact with the world. Forget about God interacting in your daily life. That's what the Greeks told us. That's what they want us to believe. Because daily life is very, very, you know, it's a scientific equation. It's very interesting for the human mind. It's very, very rational. And God is beyond that. We don't deal with that in daily life. So that's the idea of Shena. The idea of being asleep. That's this concept. It's very interesting. He's discussing how in Purim time, we were asleep for mitzvos. It's actually the same concept discussed when it comes to Hanukkah. I think the Bach describes that what caused us to get into so much trouble during Hanukkah time. Like, what was it? There always has to be a spiritual cause to any sort of attack on the Jews. So he says that we are in a Srashlim in Avodah. We actually became lazy in our Avodah Hashem. So we became lazy in Hashem, and that's what allowed the Greeks to come and attack, because we were lazy in our Avodah. We'd fallen asleep. You know, we had let things just kind of, you know, go based on habit and routine. And at that point, in come the Greeks, and they profess that there's no God, everything just happens based on habits and routines and a scientific reaction. That's how everything works. So the rest of this piece talks about Amalek in regards to Purim, so we don't need to read that right now. We can save this for a few months from now. But this whole idea of sleep, of Shena, like we have here in the Sefer Yetzirah, so the action of the month is sleeping. So what's the idea? So I think it fits into our concept as well, that sleeping is always being on autopilot. Things are kind of running as is. There's no one intervening. There's no interaction. It's just systems are all going based on what they were set up. And that's nature. Nature is teva, means that the world runs based on the way Hashem set it up at Bereishis, and sticks to that. And nature does not change. Science doesn't change. Science is going to repeat itself over and over again unless Hashem makes a nes. That's what nisim are. Nisim are Hashem overriding science. If not for that, science always takes effect. So Kislev is a month of sleeping, because the world of Yavan, the world of Choshech, it's a world, it's a month where things are asleep. Now we know, we say, Hinei lo yonim lo yishan shemer Yisrael. Hashem doesn't go to sleep. Ultimately, Hashem is always there for us. Hashem is always running the world. Hashem is always interacting, intervening. But it's our perception. Sometimes we don't sense it, and we don't see it. So, like we said, the mask over everything, nature allows Hashem to say, I'm going to run the world, but no one's going to know. Right? Because things will look like they're very, very natural. And the Nisan can become very, very natural. But behind it all, though, behind this mask, it's all going to be the light of Hashem. So we're going to put this back into, let's say, the realm of Avodah for the month of Kislev. You know, what is our job right now? So our job is to understand that this world is a world of darkness. And you look outside now, it's very, very dark. It's a month of darkness. And we have to understand, but we don't want to be caught in the darkness. So our goal then is to be able to take that which is dark and bring light to it. That light's going to be the light of the Torah. And the light of the Torah tells us that there's a whole world out there beyond that which you see. The darkness out there is all just a veil. It's a mask over something which is so much more deep and infinite and meaningful, which is the Torah. We can understand the world so much more with the light of Torah. We can take what science gives us and we can go layers and layers deeper. We don't just tell you what's happening in front of our faces. We can tell you why it's happening, where it's supposed to be going, what we're supposed to be doing in our lives. And that all is developing an appreciation and understanding of Torah. That's the idea of the keshes, and what wins the war. Is it a bow or is it a tefillah? That's the idea we said of the letter samich, is this the idea that we're closed into a world. We don't try to break out of that box and see things from beyond the box. And that's this idea of sleeping. That sleeping is when things are running just on this idea of autopilot. They're just natural. And we're trying to say, no, we got to wake up. You know, when it's dark outside, we don't want to be stuck sleeping the whole month. We want to wake ourselves up through light. You know, and light wakes us up. It's interesting. You know, when it comes to just the physical body, you know, light wakes us up. So if we're living in a slumber, if we're dozing off and we're seeing things not so clear around us, if someone shines light in our face, the sun comes up, you know, we're up. And that gets us up. Because that's supposed to give us that clarity of life to see beyond darkness. So that's, I guess that's our first taste of the Avodah of the month of Kislev. We'll stop here for the night. Any other questions? Anything else?